funny, we were already back before the COVID-19 became an obstacle. We were already anticipating trying to do the nitrogen rich reserve in local homes here, pretty much in the Laurel area. We, for the last several years, we'd all in the Laurel area had met together in a group, and we just were wanting to try to do something a little bit different. And COVID-19 helped us all out with that, forced us to shelter in place. So we get to have our meal. We did have a very excellent meal. And our meal did include some unleavened bread. We had actually a couple of different types of unleavened bread. So we got to enjoy that. Bread has been at the center of man's existence since Adam, and sort of researching the history of bread. Don't know when it began, because we've pretty much always had it. We've always had the bread. History is usually sort of quick to point out that the Egyptians were apparently the first ones to introduce leavening into the bread. Before that, the flour and oil or water were mixed together and just usually baked on a hearth. And the Egyptians began making leavened bread out of some of the byproducts of beer. The Egyptians were very astute at making beer. Now, the beer that they drank was not anything like the Miller Lite version that we have in the United States here today. I know Coors, I think, advertises that theirs is a cold filtered. The beer wasn't filtered at all. It was full of a lot of the dregs and stuff that were used to produce it from the grains. Once again, kind of going back to the connection there between the beer and the bread, both of them coming from the grains that the Egyptians were learning to grow. But mankind had developed the wheat at some early point. History would say it was a pretty much incidental innovation, in that just the ones, the grains that grew the best were the grains that they used. There's a really good chance that this was some knowledge that's just not recorded for us, that God gave to Adam, and that this grain would probably do better for the grain. But the aspect of the Egyptians using leaven for their bread and using bread that was puffed up all sort of points out to that reason that we are now using unleavened bread in our week of coming out of the sin that Egypt had. The unleavened bread of the Israelites that they would have had before they got to Egypt was the bread of sincerity and truth, as opposed to the puffed up yeast, beer yeast bread that the Egyptians would have used. So bread has been around forever, and so God uses it to instruct his people, and we have this week where we use unleavened bread, and we get a meaning out of it that points us back to God, which is where God is always wanting us to get back to. I want to start in Genesis chapter 3, verse 19, and just seeing this sort of history of bread from the Bible. We read that God had told Adam, said, in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. And that seems a little bit gross and disgusting, greedy. But the meaning there that's sort of lost in the translation is that through the sweat, the forehead being one of the first places to sweat, so you would have to do that labor. You would be forced to do labor to be able to have bread, which they weren't, didn't have to do in the Garden of Eden. So they were forced to work now to be able to eat bread. Of course, this word bread here back in Genesis 19 is a sort of a general term. It's really not particularly bread. It's pretty much all food items. It is the things that you would eat for sustenance there that it means is the meaning of the word. That also actually kind of points out, though, because the translators of the Bible translated it bread. That's very interesting that we've decided, yep, bread is the what we live on. That is what man has generally lived on. Bread has always really been then at the center of sustaining food for man. And we see then just over a few chapters in Genesis chapter 18 in verse 6 that Abraham was very quick to offer this staple of life to a very important guest. In Genesis 18 and verse 6, it says, "So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, 'Quickly, make ready 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes.'" This word cake is sort of interesting to investigate it a little bit. It's just a very simple Hebrew word, bulgah, which is an ash cake, which the idea of that is that it was cooked pretty much in the ashes. You laid it on stones that were in the your fire ashes there to be able to cook it, which is the way most of early make their cakes. They built a big fire, let it burn down, and then on those heated rocks that were actually in the ashes is how they baked that that cake. And so it's actually a pretty good amount of it too, if we go by the what we find in the commentaries is that this 3 measures would be something around the amount of an English peck. So it was a good bit of bread that she was putting together for the grain. So they wanted to be very generous in serving a good bit of bread there too. We do go over then and to in Genesis 25 and verse 34, we see the story of Jacob and Esau. It says, "And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils, and he ate and drank, arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright." So bread being important enough to Esau at that point in time to say that his birthright wasn't of any use if he was not alive to use it. So he took the bread. So we very easily through history find that bread was important to life, and in common language was called the staff of life. It is known as the very support of life. God also in Deuteronomy 8 and verse 3, he used this need for mankind to eat and to be able to have bread as a way of teaching the nation of Israel. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 3 says, he humbled you. This is, I'm reading this out of the NIV. Said he humbled you, causing you to hunger, and then feeding you with manna. So he lets you get hungry, and then he's going to provide you with the food, the manna, which neither you nor your ancestors had known. And he did this, it says, to teach you that man does not live by bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. If your King James Version Bible, you will notice that word after every word, and every word is italicized. I mean, it's not actually part of the original wording. It was added by the King James translators to clarify the meaning as they thought. But the original wording was just that you were to live by every outgoing of the mouth of God. So it was very important to have that connection with God. Going on then to these days of unleavened bread, Jesus was able then, as this very valuable physical commodity, was used to teach us a very valuable spiritual lesson using this basic requirement for physical life. He came upon opportunity at a certain meal time while teaching the multitude about the kingdom of God. We will, so we'll go to John chapter 6. We all have a need to eat. We literally have to eat. And this urge then becomes a physical driving force. It pushes us to action. Pushed a lot of people at the beginning of the scare for the COVID-19 to clear the bread aisles in your local grocery stores. So there was no bread in stores for a couple of weeks there until the people's cupboards got full of bread, I guess, and they began to calm down and the bread began to, you know, be restocked in the shelves like that. But there's that push. We have that urge, that driving force to eat that makes us do things like this. My granddaughter, Micah, is really interesting to watch. She of course knows when mealtime is ready, as they, you know, food gets placed on the table and people begin to gather around, and you can see the excitement in her. Her hands will go up and begin to wave, and she's excited. It's getting time to eat, and she is especially if she's very hungry, she is very ready to eat, and she gets excited about that. And we can get excited about food. As I said, we had some really good meal last night. We enjoyed it very much. But what if our drive to enter the kingdom of God was as strong as that hunger that we have for bread or for food? Like I said, I want to go to John chapter 6. At our Passover service, there would have been verses read from chapter 6 from the book of John, because of this discussion Jesus Christ gave as being our bread of life. The first part, though, of chapter 6, John chapter 6, is about a story of feeding of the 5,000 with the 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes. This account is universal. If you go to a harmony of the Bible, the account is found in all 4 Gospels. Over in, it's found in Matthew 14, in Mark chapter 6, in Luke chapter 9, and of course, as we said, in John chapter 6. And we won't take time out to go through the account of feeding the multitude, except for a few points that we want to do as takeaways from what happened. First off is this feeding of the 5,000 follows closely on the heels of the news that John the Baptist had been murdered by Herod. In Matthew chapter 14, verse 12, the disciples are talking about the John being beheaded, and then verse 12, then his disciples came and took away the body and buried it and went and told Jesus that John the Baptist had been killed. And then in Matthew 14, verse 13, we see where Jesus departed to a deserted place. He went off by himself. Jesus Christ needed a moment in part to grieve for John, who was a cousin and a very dear friend of his. He also had to be knowing that he had become, at the death of John the Baptist, the one that everyone would be turning to, looking for understanding. We could go into verses where that actually happened with Herod after he had killed John. He thought John had been reincarnated in Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ needed to get off by himself. He needed to get away from the multitude. The account in Mark also lets us know that the crowd had pressed upon them and kept them so busy that they didn't even really have time to eat themselves. And so they were really looking for just a little bit of a break from the crowd there. And Jesus Christ goes off by himself. And he wanted to mourn for and grieve for his friend, but he also needed to be able to have some personal prayer time between God the Father and himself. He needed to reconnect and be strengthened for what lay ahead of him. He needed to be able to go to God to partake of that spiritual food that only comes from God the Father. It is almost certain that he had suddenly become very much aware of his own approaching suffering and death. Realizing that the world had taken the life of John the Baptist, it was very easy at that point in time to be aware of the fact that the world would most certainly take his life as well. That would be a very, very sobering thing to realize. But he needed a small break from the crowd. He needed just a moment or two, but he really didn't get much of a break because the crowds of people were following close behind and seeking him out. A second thing from the account of the loaves and fishes was that, according to the Gospel of John, chapter 6, verse 4, this was around the time of the Passover season. So the unleavened bread would have been a focus for the individuals at this point in time, too. Also, we see where Jesus finds a teaching moment and wants his disciples to be able to face problems, he wants them to go to God. He wants them to turn to God when problems seem overwhelming. And he had a perfect example here with the crowd. As the disciples came to him and said, we have all these people, there's nothing out here as far as towns or any places to eat. They said, send the people away to feed themselves. And in the three other Gospels, not John 6, but the other three Gospels, almost exactly express the words of Jesus to be, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. The Apostle John, in John 6, sort of throws Philip under the bus at this point in time by saying that he was the one asked, about where we, about feeding the people. And he did not know what to do. But this was obviously an opportunity for all of the disciples to look to God, their Father, for the answer to this problem. Jesus then surprised all of them by telling them that the five loaves and the two fishes that the boy had would be enough. That this had to really expand their minds at this point in time. How could anything that small feed anywhere near this group of people? But they did. The story goes on. They fed the group of people there. And everyone, of course, would have been aware of the what was proceeding there, of all the food that was passed out. And everyone was able to eat to their fill, and everyone then was actually stuff left over to be able to gather up food so that it didn't go to waste. And this was a really spectacular moment to most people. This was something to get their attention, a very wonderful miracle that Jesus Christ was able to feed the people. Now, everyone wants to believe that Jesus is the one able to provide bread for their physical lives. But Jesus wants to change that focus. He wants to focus their attention on God. They just want to be able to eat bread to the full. You know, all of my grandkids, they love me. They love Papa because Papa gives them what they want. If you give people what they want, it's a good way to get their attention, to get them to come back, pay attention to you. Now, I'll temper that. I don't give them every single thing they want. I give them everything that their parents will allow me to give them if I can, So that's not that they don't get, a diet of soda pop and ice cream, which at this point, at being 63 years old, the thought of that kind of makes me a little bit ill and sick to my stomach. Think about eating soda pop, eating ice cream. Anyway, the kids would probably like that for just a little while until they all got sick as well. And here we are in John, in the book of John, chapter 6, and Down in verse 15, we've gotten through the story of the feeding of the 5,000. In verse 15, we read, it says, "Therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he departed again to the mountain by himself alone." Well, he's trying to, he had a teaching moment there, but now they're deciding that, well, yeah, let's put him in charge because he's able to feed us all. Jesus, of course, understands that virtually no one here seems to be getting this message about where the bread came from and about where the bread of life, which was Jesus Christ, comes from. So he goes off by himself. And although it does not tell us that in the scriptures, I'm sure he was praying to God. He was reconnecting to God, his Father, and preparing as best he could for the tremendous job that lay ahead of him. Well, we have another story in here in this same book that is mentioned in the other Gospels as well. This in verses in John 6, verses 16 through 21, we have this story of Jesus walking on the water. In John chapter 6, down to verse 22, we go, it says, "On the following day, when the people who were standing on the other side of the sea saw that there was no other boat there except the one which his disciples had entered, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with his disciples, but his disciples had gone away alone." So it's now the day after the one in which the 5,000 were fed. Multitude of people are still in this area northeast of the Sea of Galilee. They had watched the disciples get into a small boat the previous evening. They also watched that Jesus did not go with them. Only one boat had been available at the time, and the disciples had taken it. Verse 23, it says, "However, other boats came from Tiberias near the place where they ate bread after the Lord had given thanks. The following day, boats had come from Tiberias near the place where he had fed the multitude, but Jesus Christ could not have been in one of those because they just got there. But perhaps it was in these small boats that these multitude then crossed over to where the disciples were in Capernaum." Verse 24, it says, "Then when the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they also got into boats and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus." Well, they obviously, at this point, had saw the disciples leave. They did not see Jesus leave, so they had, in their mind, he's still there. They completely missed out on him walking on the water to get to the disciples later that day. They didn't know that had ever happened or would have imagined there was any kind of possibility of that. In verse 25, that we realize that this was on their mind, that this curiosity is like, you're over here in Capernaum. How did you get here? In verse 25, it says, "When they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, 'Rabbi, when did you come here?'" Because they've been following him pretty close. They've been watching him. "How did you get there?" And he avoided the question pretty much altogether. He didn't, certainly wouldn't want to try to explain to them, "Well, I just walked on the water." He avoided the question and then really just goes back, turns the question around on them. In verse 26, and says, "Jesus answered them and said, 'Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled.'" Verse 27, "Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him." Jesus answered their question really indirectly, and he realized they weren't seeking him because of who he was, but rather because of the food which he gave them. They had seen him perform a mighty miracle. This should have been able to strengthen their faith that he was the Messiah, but their interest was at this point simply in food. They had eaten of the miracle loaves, and their hunger had been satisfied. So the next day, this crowd had searched Jesus out and found him on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, having no idea how he could have made it over there and ready to follow his instruction. Seems like actually another sign, but they seemed to overlook that too. Until his instruction was to believe that Jesus was sent by God. And the first thing they do is ask for a sign from him. We've just had a couple of signs, haven't we? You know, Jesus probably had to sigh in himself just a little bit there. The Pharisees and all just kept asking for signs, you know. And a day now after he had fed a multitude with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, the people still need a sign to believe that this man is the bread of life. We're going down now to John 6, verse 31. Is our fathers in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. So these people, they said, we'd believe on Jesus if he was able to rain down bread from heaven for them. Verse 32, it says, and Jesus said to them, most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. Well, it was God that gave them the bread there. We know from Exodus 16 and verse 15, where it says, so when the children of Israel saw it, talking about the manna, they said to one another, what is it? Which is the word for manna. For they did not know what it was. And Jesus said to them, this is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. So even Moses didn't say he gave them bread. He said, this is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. So these people are telling Jesus that Moses gave them bread from heaven. Yes, Jesus was able to multiply some loaves and fishes, but he was going to need to be able to do greater things than Moses did to be able to give them bread from heaven to eat. That seems to be their entire focus here. That seems to be the sign they are looking for. And going on then to verse 34 then. Verse 33 again. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. So he's beginning to be very plain in his language then and saying what his role is. This person that is this bread that has come down from heaven and giving life to the world. Well, yeah, that's what they want. Verse 34, they say, well, then, Lord, give us this bread always. Manna had been able to nourish the children of Israel as they wandered in the desert, but it did not impute spiritual life to them. Jesus tells them that the ones that had eaten manna, down in verse 49 of John 6, those people are all now physically dead. So in trying to explain to them that their focus should be on Jesus Christ and on believing in him, that he is the bread of life. And they want bread. They want this the miracle that Moses did, rain down bread from heaven. Jesus, as I say, seems to be particularly plain with his language here, but they were just not ready at all to receive it. Beginning in verse 33 and going on down to verse 58, the phrase comes or came down from heaven appears seven times. Seven times he said, you want bread from heaven? Here it is. They couldn't see it. It was not, their minds hadn't been open. Jesus is there. He came down from heaven. He was bread. And what the crowd wanted to see was bread that came down from heaven. Then that is what they are seeing. Jesus doesn't go far before he very plainly tells him in verse 35, I am the bread of life. And in verse 51, he goes on to say, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. Well, brethren, we two nights ago, we did that. We partake of that symbol of broken bread that was Jesus Christ's body, that living bread that we need to be partake and be part of, bring into our bodies. We did that a couple of nights ago, taking that physical bread. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And then he plainly says, and the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. And remember, we're talking about this in our, this is in, getting into the, close to the Passover season again. But their understanding is far from this. Jesus obviously could not get any more plain with what he was saying, if your mind had been open to the understanding. However, virtually none of the ones there could understand the meaning of these extremely plain, very plain words that he was providing. And even some of Christ's followers were offended. Going down in John chapter 6, down to verse 61. It says, when Jesus knew in himself that his disciples complained about this, he said to them, does this offend you? And obviously, to a certain extent, the answer was yes. We're like, we don't know what you could possibly be referring to then. Skipping down to verse 66. It says then, that says, from that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. So, brethren, we have to have that understanding of Jesus Christ as the bread of life. He tried to explain to people after feeding, the miracle of feeding the 5,000. They were still focused on the bread, on that physical bread. We realize with the COVID-19 virus that, as I said, the grocery stores, the bread disappeared pretty quickly. We can't put our reliance on man to be able to provide for us and feed us even physically that way. So we need to be able to go to God to keep our relationship with God solid so that we're not shaken and afraid and when these crazy times come upon us. And as we come to the end of this age of man, this age of Satan's world, let us seek help from God on a daily basis. We'll be eating unleavened bread for the next week here to picture the removal of getting sin out of our life and drawing close to God and of taking that bread of life, that unleavened bread of life into our lives every day. We need to keep our focus on Jesus Christ as that bread of life. In this end time, we will be tested. And there will be times when it will seem impossible to have faith in God's plan of redemption for mankind. But we have been told how to be able to see ourselves through the toughest of times. We're to stay close to God, aren't we? In Matthew chapter 6. Verse 11. We're told to go before God every day and say, give us this day our daily bread. Hopefully, we're inquiring after much more than some physical bread. We need our daily spiritual bread to come from God. So we need to stay close to God during this time. I wanted to just close by going to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. 1 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And as we think about Christ being our bread of life, take more meaning in verse 24 of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 24. It says, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Well, hope everyone has a excellent Days of Unleavened Bread.